Good morning, and thank you for your patience. We are going to call the Budget and Finance Committee meeting to order. And we'd like the roll call, please.
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of April 22nd, 2019, Director Abe Koga, Director Canepa.
Say yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
Director Chavez.
Here.
Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Mitchoff. Director Ross,
here.
Director Sinks, Director Wagon Connect, Committee Vice Chair Bowders,
here.
Committee Chair Groom,
present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Would you all join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now is the time for public comment on non-agenda items. Do we have speaker cards? Thank you, Ms. Clerk. So our first approval of item of business is approval of the minutes of March the 22nd, 2019.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed or abstaining? Okay. Item number four, continued discussion of the fiscal year 2020 proposed Air District budget and consideration to recommend adoption. Good morning, Mr. McKay.
Good morning, Chair Groom. Thank you. This is the second committee meeting where we present the budget. This is the committee meeting, therefore, at which we ask for a recommendation to the full board. There will be two presentations of this budget to the full board. Because there are no changes to the budget from the prior presentation, I will be brief as opposed to going through all of the slides again. I think I will, though, take this opportunity then to, especially some of the last few slides that I've included, just to anticipate some topics that we have already discussed should come up in the fall after the budget cycle related to alternative investments. So I'll talk briefly again about the financial history, the proposed budget, and the next steps. And I'll be pacing this in a way that I assume is appropriate for the committee's desires, but of course, let me know if you want it faster or slower here as I move through this. The reserves, in our financial history, we use reserves for the downturn. We left some vacancies unfilled, we postponed expenditures, etc. And it's been suggested that the manner in which we dealt with that should be revisited for the future. In other words, we're going to, per a suggestion from our chair and vice chair, we're going to look at the manner in which we would weather a downturn in the future, and that's one of the topics we'll be bringing back later in the year. Staffing trends, we let our staffing drop down during the downturn, then we increased it again. We are making good progress on our unfunded medical liability. You know, this was almost on par with our entire budget when we started on this. And we started funding the most aggressive option that was available to us on the 115 that we're using here back at the bottom of the market. We're still using that most aggressive option. Might start thinking about diversifying out of that option a little bit. It'll be something to discuss in the fall. CalPERS, of course, less of a smooth result with time, and we revisited this several times. Fortunately, in 17, a good return, 11%, 18, a good return. 19 looks good so far, but the year is young. So let me turn to the proposed budget. $104 million, $4 million of that is pulled from reserves, but by approving the budget, the committee and board are not authorizing expenditure of that $4 million. That has to come back as another item. We certainly are continuing with the cost recovery policy, and the fee presentation has occurred and will continue. There are several presentations of those fees. No staffing level increase is requested in this budget. We're going to stick with 405. We do continue to pay down our retirement liabilities, including OPEB, and there's a 3.5% COLA. Cost recovery, again, is primarily dealt with during the fee conversation, but we have gradually approached the 85% target. but we expect to backslide on that as we fill our very large vacancy list currently. So the new and enhanced programs that we're taking on are certainly going to reduce our current level of cost recovery. So we'll need to continue dealing with that. Reserves policy, $20 million minimum, 20% of our general fund budget. And it's interesting to note, this is relative to what I talked about modeling a downturn. Back when we went through the downturn in 08, we had a reserve policy of only 15%. Now our reserve policy is both a larger percentage and, of course, a larger number because our budget is larger. We've got $30 million in the bank, so to speak, right now. Our minimum is 20. As you see in the slides, if you add the other six, we've gotten reserves that are undesignated, and plus the four that we're asking to pull out for Richmond, that's the $30 million. Let me turn now to our retirement liabilities. Two main liabilities, OPEB and pension. You know, OPEB actually, like I think I mentioned, was almost equal to our entire annual budget back in 08. And there are a lot of entities. The city of San Francisco has a $4 million budget and about a $4 billion OPEB liability. So we feel fortunate to have had the board support in digging out of that hole. So OPEB, these are actually old numbers, and we'll have a new evaluation here in just a few months. But as of 2017, a $58 million obligation, $40 million funded, and only $18 million left unfunded. And I'm sure the new auditor's result will show us in a better position here in July. So there's currently a funding policy of 90%. If we continue at this rate, we're going to be there in around 2022. And I'll talk about alternate funding options after I discuss the pension here. Our pension obligation, $283 million, with current accounting methodologies from CalPERS, they would say that at $207 million in the bank, we're 73% funded. And they would say we are 27% unfunded, $76 million. The policy the board's adopted there is a 20-year target date of 2039, which, with a little bit of crystal balling, if we put an extra $1 million in every year, we would nominally be at that 90% funded level in 2039. So balanced budget, $4 million use of reserves, again, not yet authorized by passing the budget for expenditure. Budgeted positions unchanged. We're assuming that we do see the fee proposal approved. And these last two items, $1 million annually beyond what we're required for pension and $4 million for OPEB. So we've already discussed with the board a bit the idea that there are more and more options with time because it's become increasingly desirable for various government entities to diversify out of CalPERS or whatever vehicle they use. So for OPEB, we've used what's actually a CalPERS vehicle, but it is technically a 115 trust. We don't have to use that vehicle. We could use another 115 trust if we chose to. We could even transfer money, I believe, out of the CalPERS 115 trust into another 115 trust, should we choose to. And we're seeing that although even just a year ago, the other choices were quite limited, the number of choices is growing. I think a lot of our board members are familiar with PARS, which is a 115 trust that's been pitching to us, and we think they've had some good ideas, but we've been looking forward to the idea there might be some other folks to shop, so to speak, as opposed to having PARS be the only alternative in town. So we'll be bringing forward in the fall to the committee and the board the identity of a couple different 115 trusts, the manner in which we can either override their investment decisions or even make our own investment decisions within the confines of a 115 trust. We will talk about what's currently labeled the ESG, environmental social government options for these sorts of investments. Right now, we're not seeing great options in that field, but we feel that for the sake of completeness and because of some board members' comments, we really should include those in what we're discussing. Finally, we will talk a little bit about CalPERS' offer of what's called a fresh start, which essentially says, if you wish to, you can choose to opt in to investing at an accelerated schedule into the CalPERS pension. It does have some positives, but it locks one into that decision, as opposed to if we use a 115, then we've got flexibility. So that's my presentation. This is the second presentation to the committee, so the next presentation would be if the committee refers this to the board, to the full board, May 1st and then May 15th. May 1st is the fee hearing. May 15th would be the first public hearing on the budget, and June 5th would be the second public hearing on the budget. So the recommendation would be that the committee refer the budget to the board for approval, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Director Hudson?
It, more for clarity, Jeff. I see on the my previous page it's got slides 17 and 18, and then the recommendations 21. Is there something missing, or? Or did you just, it got
X'd? Thank you. Yeah, Director Hudson, you're exactly right. I believe that since there was no recommendation in the previous deck, that when we pulled the recommendation slide into here, it retained an old slide number.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm fine with the recommendation.
Yeah.
Director Mitchell, thank you. Okay. Any other comments? All right. What's your pleasure?
I'll move staff recommendation. Second.
Any other comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone?
Aye.
Vanessa, any public comment?
Madam Chair, I erroneously forgot to let you know that there was a public comment for item 3 on the minutes.
Okay.
So the speaker requested that she be able to comment on item 4, which she submitted a card for.
Absolutely.
Roll her comments from 3 into
Absolutely.
This as well. Okay. So I'll extend her time by 2 minutes if that's okay.
That's perfect.
Okay.
Good morning. Hi, my name is Janet Wittick. I'm here with SEED, the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance. And last month, my colleague Devin Richards testified in front of you about the need to better understand how the 6 budget fee categories map back to the 24 individual fee schedules in Regulation 3. And we were hoping to get that information. However, the minutes do not reflect this, and we have not seen any information provided by staff. So I just wanted to raise that issue again to you today. So now I'll just flip right over into our comments on the budget. I think many of you know that SEEB, we like to call ourselves the process people, and every year you hear us say that we want to see the budget considered in line with fees, and every year we hear back, yes, you know, we hear you, and that's a good idea, and we're doing that. But we still struggle to understand how the budget and fees relate to each other. And I've thought a lot about how to improve this process and wanted to share some ideas with you today. First, we'd like to have a policy that commits to releasing the proposed budget at least 1 week before public comments are due on Regulation 3. This helps the district substantiate any proposed fee increases and allows stakeholders to be more informed about the budget as we review Reg 3 fee amendments. Second, we ask that the staff conduct at least 1 public workshop or a working group meeting on the budget specifically. Staff held a single workshop on Reg 3 amendments on February 19th, but no information at that time was available on the budget. The budget wasn't released until March 14th, almost a month later. And so it's really difficult to discuss with the district any questions about the budget in 3-minute testimony before this committee. And we actually think most of our questions could be addressed in direct conversations with staff. For example, we'd like to understand why professional services and contracts have increased by 82% since 2018. These expenditures now amount to about 25% of the district's entire budget, making it seem that 25% of the workload is being contracted out. And this comes despite a 22% increase in staffing levels over the same time period, so since 2018. And we just would like to understand a little bit more about how much and what work is being contracted out. Additionally, these numbers do not seem to capture the recent approval of the contract with ACLIMA, which would add another $3 million to contracted services in this fiscal year alone, bringing the total budget to, well, it would increase from $28 million to about $31 million. Which leads me to my third recommendation. So we ask staff to consider releasing a table that lists all of the district's services and contracts. Now, I know it's never popular comparing air districts, but I brought an example from the South Coast budget, which provides this level of detail. And it's worth noting that South Coast spends about $8 million on outside contracts each year, so it's about a third of what's proposed here in the Bay Area. They also have multiple public consultation workshops on the budget, as well as the Budget Advisory Committee. Finally, we'd like to know more detail about how AB 617 costs are being allocated across programs and in the different work areas, and to have greater transparency in how the district is managing both the state grants as well as the impact on individual fee schedules. And I have to note that Steve supports sustained state funding for program implementation, so we're not at all questioning that. We would just like greater transparency over the district accounting. And, you know, we submitted several more detailed questions in our March 21st letter about Reg 3 amendments. We have not seen a staff report on Reg 3, and we're hoping to get a response to comments in a staff report, and we also hope that one is released and prepared. So thank you for the opportunity to comment today, and we look forward to working with you on improving the process.
Thank you very much for being here today. Mr. McKay, have you provided with some of the answers that they've asked for, or is it just taking more time to draft that document?
Director Groom, I did have the impression that we had answered many of their questions, and perhaps some direct conversation would be helpful in that. I do think it's relevant on the fee topic that we just completed the review of the fees, and that was with an outside consultant, and industry was invited to participate in that. And that's an incredibly detailed and to the point of being rather dry process where I can't imagine what detail is left out. But
and
we'll
certainly, I think, have been very clear that AB 617 has added not only just to our workload, but also to our personnel, as well as in having to increase some of our budget items. I think we've been really clear about that. Director Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the speaker did bring up, as she was opining about the increased use of consultants, you know, you run through your mind the cost-benefit analysis of using consultants, and the first thing that pops up after an OPEB and pension discussion is, well, you don't have to pay them pensions or OPEBs, which then led me to think, are the cost in the cost recovery figures that we cite, for which we base the increase in fees, which is what she's probably concerned about, do we have the embedded costs of OPEB and pension costs inculcated into those fees?
It's actually a very important question, Director Ross. Many of the obligations we incur under AB 617 are not recoverable. We're able to recover our costs that are related to our core processes, so to speak, which is primarily permitting and enforcement and the processes that support those, rulemaking to a certain extent. Not all of AB 617 is directly allocable in that manner. Some of it is, some of it is not. And our general counsel could go into that even more, perhaps. Well, that's right. On the 617 side, the process is designed to go into communities and address exposure to air pollution. But as you know, a good portion of that comes from mobile sources over which we don't have authority and for which we cannot use our fee authority to recover the costs. So to the extent that work is related to planning around mobile or other sources outside of the stationary source realm, that leaves an unfunded area, and the state is providing some funding for that. And we've been very careful about what we can attribute to stationary sources versus that which we cannot. And that's been a very large part of the conversation with the legislature around the need for additional funding for 617 efforts.
Thank you. I appreciate that portion of the 617 realm. But my question, I guess, was and that's helpful, but my question is actually more broad for any fee inculcated, for not just 617, but across the board. Do we have a proportional figure or an amount that we tack on for the FTEs that are working on a permit?
I'm sorry, that part of your question was not addressed, and I will address it, although Jeff is more than capable of saying it. I just happen to have the mic at the moment. Yes, when we do the work of allocating staff efforts to fee-based or non-fee-based programs, a portion of that is, of course, the benefits that go with the employment of the person. It's not simply the hourly rate we pay somebody. We attribute the total cost of having an employee on the payroll, including overhead, because we actually pay to live in a particular place and have energy and water provided, et cetera. So all of those costs roll into the cost of providing the services that we can recover fees for.
Including projected OPEB and pension costs?
Well, to the extent, it's not necessarily projected.
Director Ross, it's our actuals.
Yeah.
Our actuals. But the actuality is we do have to pay that at some point for that employee.
Right.
But it's not reflect. But well, the work they're doing today, but so for costs incurred today, we're not collecting the costs that we're going to have to pay down the road for the employee doing the work today.
Which is why we've been trying to shift all of that away from a pay-go system so that you're making those investments in the moment for the future obligation you'll have. And that's why we're driving the future obligation down.
Well, I get that. I mean, it's great sound policy. I'm just wondering, should there be some apportionment of those future costs to today's work being done that get ascribed to fees?
I guess what I'm saying is there is.
Yeah, Director Ross, the payments that we make that go into the bank, so to speak, to fund the liability that's already been incurred but that we're not yet paying, those payments do count as a cost for our cost recovery calculation. So in that manner, I believe that what you're hoping is happening, if I'm understanding you correctly, is happening. So for instance, for OPEB, we're paying $4 million a year in to get caught up on our unfunded liability, and that $4 million a year is in fact increasing our cost for the cost recovery calculation.
Okay, but if I was to parse it down even further, I not everybody, that's for the whole, all of our FTEs and all of our obligations, but not everybody in the building works on those particular projects.
That's correct. It's an allocation.
It is an allocation. And so for non-fee recoverable, it's non-fee recoverable funds that provided, and for fee recoverable work, that portion is attributed to that.
Good. I'm glad we're doing it to that fine of a detail, it sounds like.
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Before we go to other directors, we have one more public speaker.
Kevin Buchan.
Thank you.
There we go. Good morning while it's still morning. I'm Kevin Buchan with the Western States Petroleum Association. There was a comment made today also by staff and also made last time about that we were invited to be a part of the audit team. Previously it was with Matrix Consulting. This round has been with Simpson. That did not happen. We weren't requested to be involved in any of the work that they did in auditing, the books for the district. We did pick up a copy of the audit report, and I'm not an accountant, and I don't pretend to be. However, it did seem to just mention that it evaluated how well the district follows standard practices for accounting. A year ago in February, we asked that there be a better staff coding of time, especially for five refineries who I represent. The only time we had heard anything that had made an improvement on that was when I talked to staff at the first few workshop. We weren't involved in any of those discussions whatsoever. Right now, looking over the last year, normalizing the fees because the fee timing changed a little bit with your calendar. Essentially, the district collects about $12 million a year for five refineries. So that's about $1 million a month of staff time and whatever costs are associated with running the five refinery programs. And we are struggling with how staff cannot possibly be recovering over 100% of their costs for doing the program, let alone 85. What we did ask in our comment letter is that we would like to have your current auditor, Simpson & Simpson, just do an audit of how many hours and what the real costs are, kind of consistent with what the speaker from CEB asked for, so that we can create some transparency on the budget to see really where are the fees going. Where the $4 million that are going to be attributed to the new facility that's in Ripchin, where do those dollars come from? Well, we don't know. We just think there's a significant lack of transparency in the budget, especially for the five refineries who are contributing significantly to their regulatory programs. So thank you, and I'll take any questions if you have them.
Thank you. Mr. McKay, the request to be part to have a closer look with the Matrix Consulting, were we able to accommodate that at all?
Yes, Chair Groom. So Speaker convoluted two separate processes. We have an annual audit by Simpson, and that was referenced, and that's just our annual audit. We also had by Matrix, it wasn't the previous time, but in fact this time also, Matrix did the cost recovery study, which was focused on exactly the topics the speaker referenced in great detail, and WISPA was in fact invited to participate.
Thank you. Now, Director Hudson.
Let me try and do this in two parts. First, the minutes do reflect, just in case somebody gets the impression that they didn't, that Devin and Kevin did speak. It didn't go into elaboration of what was actually spoken. That's for the minutes. I wouldn't change that motion. I don't think second either. On four is the recommendation to send the budget to the full board and hold the public hearing. I still think we need to do that prior to it reaching the full board. I think you probably need to make a call to Kevin and Devin and make sure that the questions that they're bringing up today get answered so that we don't get protracted in the full board meeting.
Thank you, Director Hudson. We do have a person working on responses to those comments.
Director Mischoff.
Thank you. And I'm going to follow up on Director Hudson. Sorry to use this term, but I'm hearing a he said, she said. You're mentioning that you're working on a response. I'm just thinking you ought to sit down instead of letters going back and forth. And I know that takes staff time, but this is a concern that I continue to hear. Somehow what you're doing is great, but it's not being either interpreted or received. And I recognize that WISPA was invited. I don't know if they were not able to attend or see or whatever, but somehow something's not getting together here. This needs to be resolved. So other than just doing a response, which I'm interpreting means written, sit down, have a meeting, and go over, and I'm going to ask WISPA and CEB not to be picky about it, but I keep hearing about fees aren't transparent. Yet we have these hearings. They seem that way. We have a policy. It is what it is, and we need to recover. We're not getting enough money. The budget shows that. But I recognize what you're saying. So don't want to be a broken record, but please just sit down and have a meeting. Thank you.
Director Chavez, do you have anything to add?
I just wanted to thank you so much, Director Groom, for asking me. I do want to just encourage that there be a meeting. I think that's right. I think that the more clarity that we have, the better. So I wanted to reinforce what Director Mitchoff just said. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Ross, anything? All right. Is that, that's enough for item four for the moment? So we will go to item number five, which is the third quarter.
I'll make a motion to recommend. Did we make?
Did we did.
We've moved it already?
Both, yes, and we voted.
Both items are together on the?
Yeah.
You got what you got? Never mind.
That's okay. Item number five is the third quarter financial report. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Groom and members of the Budget and Finance Committee. So today I am presenting our third quarter financial report for the fiscal year ending June of 2019. And to begin my presentation today, we'll provide an overview of the general fund revenues, expenditures for the third quarter. We'll also provide an overview of our investment portfolio as of March. And I will also provide a review of our general fund balance and outstanding liabilities. And then I will conclude with our purchasing report requirements. So to just begin, this slide provides sort of an overview of our major revenue sources for the general fund for what we've actually recognized as of March 31st and comparing it to the budget that was adopted. And just looking at some of the major differences here, I just wanted to point out, for example, with our permit fees, Title V fees, and asbestos fees, that those categories did exceed the original budget. And this was really a result of the one-time revenue adjustment that was made to some of the fee payers' anniversary date to comply with Rule 1215.
Madam Chair, would I be correct in my assumption, even though those are over 100%, it's based on what the budget was, not that we recovered 130% of fees or 106%. This is just as it relates to the what was budgeted. So when you just said it was an increase,
right,
it's because we didn't budget or the budget didn't reflect.
Correct.
It was lower. So I think that's
well,
a real important distinction.
Let me just,
sure,
just clarify. So initially when we adopt our budget, as you see, we're adopting our budget process. This was done over a year ago where we projected what we thought our revenue was going to be. At that time when the 2019 budget was prepared, we were not aware of the additional revenue that we were going to get in related to this adjustment. So the budget initially did not reflect this one-time adjustment.
And so, as you prepare this next budget, which we just reviewed,
correct,
you've had more accurate information such that when you prepare a year from now, we probably won't see such a large or over 100%. The hope is that it's right on target for where we should be at this point in the fiscal year.
Yeah. So as we prepared a budget, we just prepared it based on our best projection at the time. So basically for 2020, we are again providing our best projection of what we think our revenues will come in. Obviously, there could be things that happen in the market or conditions that could affect our initial projection. Mm-hmm. Okay, so next to slide four, this slide provides a sort of a prior year to current year comparison for the same period. And when we compare those two fiscal years, actual, and look at some of the significant differences, we see that the permit fee categories that I previously mentioned increased in 2019. And again, that's due to that one-time revenue adjustment. And also, we had an increase in our fee schedule for the current year that was approved by the board. Another significant change here is a reduction in penalties and settlements in 2019. And again, this is a category that's not easily predictable. It just fluctuates from year to year. Slide number five, again, summarizes our general fund expenditures incurred as of March 31st and compares it to the initial budget. As you can see here, overall, our actual expenditures represent 72% of the budget. This next slide, we are also looking at a year-to-year comparison for expenditures and looking at those major differences. And in terms of the major differences here, as you can see, salaries is higher in 2019, and that's a result of increased staffing as well as a 3.1% COLA. As staffing increases, so does benefits. And so, as you can see, we've seen an increase in benefits. And also, in addition to that, we've also seen an increase in our CalPERS required contribution. And on this slide, I've also added the recent office acquisition. And as you can see, that was not initially a part of the budget, but it was approved by the board using reserves. And that was for the additional office space here at this building, but also our recent purchase for the Richmond location. This next slide provides a snapshot of the district's investment account balance with San Mateo County as of March 31st. And the district balance of $281 million represents 4.9% of the $5.5 billion in the investment pool. Interest earned during the third quarter was 2.5%. Slide 8 shows the audited fund balance. We look at the 2017 and the 2018 fund balance and also provided what we believe the projected fund balance will be for this fiscal year, and that's estimated at $30 million. We've also included at the bottom of this slide the unfunded liabilities for pension and OPEB, which Jeff just presented in his presentation. And we've also included here what we believe is our estimated principal and interest payment as it relates to our certificate of participation note issued for the purchase of this building, and that is estimated at $27 million. And finally, in compliance with our district admin code and as a part of this quarterly report, we've also provided a list of our recurring routine business payments that exceed $100,000. And this next slide provides a list of the cumulative vendor payments that exceeds $100,000 without board approval, and that's as of March of 2019. And as you can see, these are mainly benefit payments, utilities, and other routine services required to conduct our day-to-day operations. And this concludes my presentation. I'm willing to ask any questions, please.
Director Mischoff.
Thank you. Going back to slide 3, county receipts, is that just a function of the collection of taxes and the moving it to us? Is it always, because we should be give or take 75% and we're only at 57. So yeah. Is it just a lag? Is it that we projected more coming in, or what is your estimation?
So in terms of the county receipt, this is our property tax that we get from the 9 counties. And we typically get them in 2 installments. One is in December, where we get a half projection.
And since they were just due on
correct.
April 10th.
So the next real significant installment will come in April. So you will see that on the next fourth quarter report.
And
so it's not that we are
to 100%.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
And then the last line, the miscellaneous revenue, again, trying to accurately assume what that would be. Obviously, mm-hmm. we're way over. Could you give us some examples of what miscellaneous revenue is?
So this is sort of some of the catch-all that don't necessarily fit into some of these other categories. So as an example, just to give you an example, we recently, with the purchase of the Richmond site, there are some HOA fees, revenues that we're collecting, and so that's reflected here, where it wasn't necessarily a part of our initial budget. But we have revenues that have come in throughout the year. Some of it is just reimbursements that we've received, where it might have been for the prior year, but the revenue came in the current year. So there are just some timing issues there as well.
And I appreciate that. I'm just, because you said we're beginning to collect some fees, so this year's budget that we're going to be looking at and approving, is that miscellaneous revenue budgeted item higher than $100,000, or do we just usually keep it
we
around
$100,000? We try to be conservative because it's one of those where it's just, you know, some we have small reimbursements that come in, and so it's not as easy to determine what those will be.
Since we don't know that they're coming in, more or less unexpected, or we mm-hmm. expect at least that. Do they go into a reserve fund? They just get put into the general fund and they're there, like we're thrilled that we have more money in our bank account than I'm talking personally. Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at my checking account, it's like, oh,
yeah.
At the end of the month, I have more than I thought. Is mm-hmm. Or do they go into a reserve for the board to allocate to a specific? I know we've taken money out of reserves to do some things. Our reserves are higher than our policy. I'm just curious mm-hmm. what happens to the miscellaneous revenue if it's not expected, then it wasn't budgeted. Other than as miscellaneous.
So in this case, our HOA fee is an example. That's kind of the reason why it's a higher dollar amount here. That does have to be set aside and used specifically for the Richmond site. So that's just not going to fall necessarily to just used at the board's discretion. That has to be set aside. In terms of some of the other reimbursements we've gotten, some of them are really receipts that come in, let's say, for health benefit payments that, you know, some of our retirees have paid us. So that has to go back into the general fund.
So those are... Even though it's put here as miscellaneous revenue on your, I'm going to use an old term, maybe it's still current, chart yeah. of accounts or whatever, they're listed as separate.
Correct.
In my county, you've got an organization number mm-hmm. and a sub-organization number. So mm-hmm. that's how, even though it's all put to us as miscellaneous revenue, you've got it tracked more specifically.
Yes, we have it tracked more specifically. We just try to roll these up into some major categories so we're not listing a real detail line item. But
thank
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm. Director Hudson.
Yeah, slide 10, vendor payments, item 20, Wang Brothers Investments, $382,000 for the rich. Is that I'm the sorry. Old lease? And when does it end?
Yes, it is the old lease, and the portions of it, it's a series of leases, actually. And I think some of it ends the end of this year. Is that, yeah, the end of this year, so we're almost done.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Osage, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Do we have to accept this report?
I'll move to accept the report.
Second, Mr. Hudson. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Before we go to...
She said aye.
Before we go to number six, which is the public comment piece, I want to make a suggestion. I think that the comments made by WISPA and SEEB today, you know, are a little troubling. Not that there's anything wrong, but they're a little troubling. So I'm going to suggest, Mr. McKay, that when you organize a meeting with them, that Director Bowders and I also attend. And
certainly.
We can have a full-fledged conversation.
Very good.
Okay. Now, item six is public comment, once again, on any other agenda item, non-agenda items. Going, gone? Okay. Number seven, committee member comments or other business? All right. Number eight. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, September 25th, 2019 at 9:30 a.m. in this building. And with September 25th. And with that, we'll be adjourned.
Thank you.